a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
In today's episode of Project Recovery,
this podcast will not fix you because I truly believe only you can fix you. But this podcast will show you people that have been in similar situations, some better, some worse than you, that have figured out a way to make it right.
Make sure you listen to the end. Find us on Facebook at Project Recovery. We'll have that and much more coming up.
Welcome to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery, and it's brought to you by our friends at knowyourscript.org. They got a three-part solution. Speak out, opt out, and of course, throw out. If you want more information about them, check them out on their website, knowyourscript.org. Dr. Matt?
How you doing?
It's been crazy.
It's been a crazy week, huh?
And
who would have known that this week would be so different than our average weeks as far as this podcast show goes.
And you know, when we first set out to do this podcast, our hope was just to let people start a conversation about an uncomfortable subject that's happening to people all across the state and all across the world. Yeah. We wanted to be able to have an open forum for people to come on, share their triumphs, share their losses, share their fails and their victories and all that. And that's what it does. And I think we've done a pretty good job thus far doing that.
I'll have to admit, while I am typically a very optimistic person, my hope was that we could do it for a year and that we would be able to tap into a market of people that it would be beneficial to. And here we are next month, 2 years, you know, 2 years later, and we have a much bigger audience than I ever thought we would have.
So when I pitched this idea, when they were firing me, I pitched this idea, and they agreed. They said, get a doctor.
This is one of my favorite stories.
I got a doctor. So Dr. Matt, will you do this podcast with me? You bet. So I sat down in one of the salesperson's office, and I told him, he goes, what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm doing a podcast with you guys. He goes, oh, that's good. And he goes, listen, don't – if you get 10,000 downloads in your first year – that's a good podcast. Mm. And so I had that goal. 10,000 in a year, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
I'm happy to say, and I'm humbled to say, and that coming up on 2 years, we're going to be over 700,000 downloads.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, I'm blown away that this little podcast has had that kind of reach. And it's not me and you. I mean, we're a part of it. And Josh is a part of it. And KSL is a part of it. And Bonneville Communications is a part of it. But it's the community that we serve that really are the superstars of this podcast. The family that we have created by doing this. People coming on here willing to share their stories. Some of the most intimate moments, some of the scariest moments, some of the most tragic moments of their life to be able to come on and share their stories with us.
Oh, yeah. What's really fun is the way I look at it is we have a new star of the show every week, right?
Yes.
You and I are always here. Josh is here. Everyone else that supports us is here. But the star, we get a new star every week, and that's really not understating it. I mean, that's why we have so many downloads. It's funny when I remember you say it. I remember us talking about 10,000 downloads if we can do that, and I was thinking, wow, that seems like a lot, because you don't know how to measure podcasts very well. Like, there's some that have millions of downloads, and then there's some that have five, and we were thinking, 10,000 sounds like a lot. But the reason we have so many is because we have great stars on this show. Every single week, people come in and they're very open and honest, and it's a fun. I mean, don't you think it's fun to, I think because we've tried to spin, I think we've modeled the spirit of the podcast after your personality, which is optimism. You're a very optimistic person, and that even the name Project Recovery, like we talk a lot about people's low points. We talk a lot about rock bottom and a lot of repeated failures, if you want to think of it that way. But it, the real focus is on the recovery, and that recovery is possible, and it's happening all around us all the time. And I think that, plus just people's willingness to be so open and authentic, that's what makes it fun for me, at least.
And so I appreciate your kind words to me, and I try to have an optimistic view on recovery. I've said it before. I got sober to live. I didn't get sober to hide. But I also think it's your relatability and the way you come across. You don't come – I mean, I don't mean this in any disrespect way. You don't come across as a doctor. I mean, your knowledge is there, but I mean, you got this long hair, you got different Vans on, you're wearing a skate shirt every time you come in, you're very relatable and knowledgeable. And the crazy stuff that bounces around in my head and I say it, you bring validity to it. You make it sound like it's supposed to sound, and you go, this is what I'm doing. Then you go, well, actually the science behind this means, and I go, oh yes, that makes sense. You know what I mean? I just thought that I didn't know why it was working. And you tell me why it is working by, you know, the certain things that I'm doing, and the steps and the pre-contemplation and all that heavy stuff that you bring to it, but you don't bring it in such a heavy way. And so I really applaud you for doing this with me. And I, after this, that letter that we read from my daughter, after I mean, it went viral, man. I mean,
yeah, isn't that neat?
We're at 1.2 million views on that letter.
Yeah, isn't that neat? That's so much fun.
And, you know, my daughter's cool with it. And
because you asked her ahead of time, right? If you could read.
So here's the true story. So I did ask my daughter if I could read the letter.
Yeah, and I've learned a lesson in making sure my follow-up questions are specific.
So I said, hey, Presley, can I read the letter? And she said, sure, Dad, and she sent it to me.
Which Josh and I took as on air.
Yeah, I know. It was emotional, and I'm going to be honest with you. When I read that letter for the past 2 days, Thursday and Wednesday of last week, I was emotionally drained. I mean, I was feeling things that I hadn't felt in a long time. I was looking at my recovery through other eyes. I was experiencing the pain that I put my daughter through. And I'm to be honest with you, it wasn't a good feeling. I mean, it kicked my butt, and I did a lot of soul searching.
So we recorded that for the listeners. We recorded that on the same day we recorded another episode this week, and we had guests, and the guests, they were virtual guests, and then they left. And then I look over, and you're standing up, bent over at the waist, rubbing your pants, your jeans, with like on your knees with your hands. And then you sit down, and then the camera starts to roll. And I think if people go back to Facebook and watch the video, they can see you look uncomfortable, which is maybe only two or three times have I ever seen you look uncomfortable. And I realized as we started going, I'm like, oh, he's anticipating we're going to read the letter right now, because I wasn't sure we were going to do it that day. And I've never really seen you look uncomfortable. And so I'm not surprised that you felt emotionally drained afterwards. But man, I think it's worth it, because it's touched so many people's lives, this letter.
I was talking to Josh. He's our producer off air. And my whole life, I'm 47. And I still kiss my dad on the lips. I still kiss my mom. My side of the family, the Scott family, is a very affectionate side of the family. My ex-wife's family, they don't hug. They don't say, I love you. It's not that they don't mean it, but they don't. That's not how they are.
Different styles.
And when I was married, I used to love to tell my father-in-law I love him and
make
give him
uncomfortable.
Because, I mean, he would just straighten up.
Yeah.
And my two youngest are very affectionate. Presley, my oldest, hasn't been that. But I can tell you, this weekend, I have hugged her more than I have in her whole life. Mm-hmm. And we've had some of the best talks we've ever had. We have a better understanding of each of us than we've ever had. And that letter was such a blessing to me. It really was. I didn't realize when I got it what a gift that letter's to me and to millions of people out there. I mean, I've spent days reading the responses on those letters of people going, I finally understand what my daughter was going through. I finally understand what my kids are going through. I understand what my ex-wife went through. Mm-hmm. And it was, I didn't know that a letter like that could be so healing, that could touch so many people, and the power of a young girl's voice seeing her dad through addiction. I mean, it was, I mean, I'm still speechless, although I'm talking all the time, to the power of that letter.
Well, it's sort of, we've talked, this is a real example of what an authentic letter, when you write from your heart to someone else, can really do, the impact it can do. In the past, we've talked about gratitude letters, and this is sort of like that. This has that flavor to it, where Presley, and I'm sure she wrote this narrative just wanting to be authentic. It's extremely well written. She's very articulate, especially for a young person her age, and she expresses herself in such a good way. It's a great narrative. From she better have gotten an A+ because it's very, very well written. But it expresses just that genuine, authentic experience that she had through her eyes, like you said, of an alcoholic father and parents that were struggling and how things have turned out. And she didn't know when she wrote that, but she was giving insider information and I think hope and understanding to so many people who maybe have never understood how their kids have felt during their alcoholism or substance abuse, or maybe a voice to somebody who grew up in her position and never had the opportunity or took the opportunity to write a letter like that to her parents. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that have really gravitated towards this letter because I think they see themselves as one of the characters in what's happening there. And it's very healing when you can find yourself in someone else's narrative.
And the thing is when she wrote this, it was for a class assignment. I mean, this wasn't to be read on a podcast. This wasn't even intended for me to read. This was a young girl getting thoughts off her head and detailing experiences of her life, giving the narrative.
I think it's really great that the English teacher reached out to you, because if they hadn't, you would have never known about that letter, right?
You know, the crazy thing is that because I have read the comments and a lot of people have DM'd me and given me their own thoughts. But there were so many amazing things that happened in there. He's no longer my brother-in-law, but he's my ex-brother-in-law, and I love him. And I don't think I've ever told him thank you. But Kyle and his wife, Alex, you know, they
feature prominently in Presley's letter.
Yeah. And when she needed somebody, they stepped up and they were there. And that breaks my heart, because that was supposed to be my job. That was my job, and I failed her. And by the graces of God and having good people surrounded me, they stepped up and they did it. And the English teacher reaching out to me, my ex-wife, you know, I was overwhelmed with positivity and gratitude for being surrounded by so many great people during such a horrible time in my life. But that was the crux of the letter, is that although it was bad for me, I now know how bad it was for everybody else, as in through Presley's writings.
But, you know, I mean, it's a great example of how life, especially raising our kids, but just life in general, takes a village, right? It takes a community of people, family, friends, people who come together to support each other, because everybody goes through difficulties from time to time. And they're almost always unexpected, and they're almost always worse than you think they ever would be. And when you have people like, you know, your brother and sister-in-law, when you have an English teacher, when you have, you know, an ex-wife, when you have people who will step up and support you, you feel that village, you feel that community, and you can't do it all yourself. Yeah, you failed her because you had a disease, but no parent can do it all by themselves. We all need help and support.
And I'm so appreciative to everybody involved. And that's what we've often said on this podcast. Project Recovery is a podcast about addiction, more importantly, about recovery. And when we're talking about addiction, Dr. Matt, everybody thinks the opposite of addiction is abstinence.
Right. I mean, from a mathematical standpoint, that makes sense, I guess. Right?
You know, but that's not the reality. We have found on this podcast and through the community that we have created because of Project Recovery, the opposite of addiction is community and connection.
Right.
And we're making those connections through this podcast. So we want to encourage everybody out there who has a story to tell, who would like to come on and give hope, because that's really what this podcast gives, is hope.
I feel like sort of like we're lucky that we kind of sort of live here in the middle of that. And people are building the community around us, around the show, with the show. I feel like they're as much owners of what we do as we are, if that makes sense. Because
100%,
you know, we have a new star every week comes on, and that's a person that generally we don't know. We've known some of them.
Uh-huh.
And then we have their friends and family, and we have our regular listeners, and we have new listeners all the time. And people are building this community because they want to feel hopeful. We all want to feel optimistic. Everybody, I think that's one of the biggest lights that people are driven towards is optimism and hope. And with such a horrible disease as addiction in all its different forms is, it's so great to feel hopeful sometimes about it.
And sometimes hope is all you have. And when we first started this podcast, I remember talking to people going, listen, I don't want to sell you a bill of goods. This podcast, Project Recovery, will not fix you. It cannot fix you because I truly believe only you can fix you. But this podcast will show you people that have been in similar situations, some better, some worse than you, that have figured out a way to make it right. And through these stories, hopefully you can see something in your story or some direction that you can head or something that you can implement in your life that's going to make a small change. And you make enough small changes, you're going to change. And that's what's going to happen. And that's what this podcast can really do. It can show you that it's possible. And there's a lot of people out there who have done it different ways. We've had people come in here who've done it white knuckle, and that means they didn't do anything. And they just said, I'm going to get sober. And we've had people come in who do 12-step. We've had people come in who do meditation. We've had people who do all kinds of different
some
ways.
Some with a spiritual stent, some without. I mean, there's just – well, that I think is such a cool thing because I remember back when I was a graduate student learning about substance abuse and mental health. And to be honest to me, it wasn't that interesting to me as a young graduate student. And all that was really being promoted at that time – were 12-step programs.
Well, it was the only game in town, really, back then.
Right. And now it makes so much more sense to, we have so many different treatment modalities and options to customize those for people. And it's neat to have people come in and talk about the very different things they've done.
I've said to many people out there, my recovery is like going to an all-you-can-eat buffet. I got my tray. And my trade is going to be based in recovery. That's what my goal is. And then I walk down and I see all the different tools that people can use and utilize to stay sober, to find their recovery and get it going. And I go, okay, meditation? Yeah, I like that. I'm going to put that on my tray. I'm going to come down here. Being positive, I'm going to take that. I'm going to put this on here. Talking to a therapist, I'm going to put that on there.
Exercise. That's been a big one for you.
I mean, yeah, give me two scoops of that. You know, and that's what I'm doing is I'm building my recovery. Now, when we started this podcast, I had a lot of people reach out and go, hey, I want what you want. I want to go where you went. I want to do the things you did because it seems to be working for you. And I always said, I hope you can, but if you can't, I don't want you to stop that. I don't want that to stop you from getting sober. You got to figure out your recovery. My recovery is mine. It's specific to me. It makes sense to me and I'm able to do it. And, right now I've got over 893 days of sobriety.
Nice. Well
which done. Is pretty yeah. amazing to me.
Yeah,
and so
great.
The plan that I'm working seems to be working, but I still have bad days. I still have good days, and I'm still figuring it out.
Let me ask you this, because I haven't literally had the time to read through all the comments from the letter from our last post. Were there any negative ones? Were there any that were sort of challenging you? Because it's interesting to me, just while you think about it, we get a lot of great Facebook comments. And I would say, of course, most of them are positive.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we get some very critical ones, and I'm wondering if we've had any.
In the beginning, when they posted the Facebook on KSL's Facebook, their web department called me and goes, you cracked the code. And I go, crack the code? What does that mean? And she goes, this is the first post in a long time that we didn't have a ton of negative comments. That where all of a sudden the comments started to outweigh what the actual topic was. It was people fighting amongst people. It was really unifying for everybody who was watching that. Now, after about 6 days on the internet, they're starting to get in some people that have issues with me, a couple issues with you.
With me.
Yeah, I know. I hesitate to bring
it
up.
I shaved the beard. What else do they want?
But, you know, some of the ones that I read, and it's people that I come across all the time, they'll go, well, alcoholism's not a disease. It's a choice.
Sure, some people say that.
You know, and so, and my response to that's always been, I'm not going to fight you on that.
Because you're wrong.
But my job is not to change the way you
right.
think.
Right, I agree.
You know, I'm not right. going to win. Most people want to hear their opinions coming out of your mouth. And they're going to fight you tooth and nail
that's
until
a great
that happens.
Way to, that's a great way to say
you,
it.
You know, yep. So I'm not going to sidebar the conversation to get you in an argument over semantics. Okay? Right. Whether it's a choice or it's whether a disease, they're both tough to conquer.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe that's arguable. I don't really think, based on the place we live now, this moment in history with research, that it's really unarguable. It's not really an argument anymore. However,
yeah,
if you are an addict, who cares how you got there? What we do need to focus on is how to get you out of it.
And so that's where
that's the recovery part. And so you can have your opinions about how a person got there, but who cares?
And so I focus on that, and I try to say, well, so I don't even acknowledge that part. I go, well, I hope the best for you, and if there's anything I can do, let
yeah,
me know.
That's all you can
you
say.
Know, because I'm not going to get in semantics argument. I'm not going to do it.
I know that the feedback's been overwhelmingly positive, and I think for sure the reason is because people are really connecting with the message. They're really seeing, like you said, maybe for the first time, understanding members of their own family and mm-hmm. what they've gone through. Because of their own addiction. And I just hope that it's powerful enough to inspire even more people to really consider finding the recovery program that works for them.
You know, it's crazy when I look through the comments. I mean, I had people that write to me that say, I was Uncle Alex in my family scenario.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I've had people that go, I was your ex-wife in this scenario. Mm-hmm. I was you in this scenario. Mm-hmm. And so it meant so many different things to so many different people. And so it was really interesting to see that.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were some people telling me what I need to do and what I should do. And I listened to it, you know what
sure.
I mean? And there was some good advice in there and there was some bad advice, but it goes back to me and my recovery buffet.
Yeah.
I take what I know I'm going to do, and I take what I can. I can't focus on the past, and I can't change that. All I can do is live in the present and look for a better future. And that's where I'm going with my recovery. And because of a 16-year-old daughter story, we've made a difference. And I'm excited to see where this is going to go. And it kind of gave me a shot of energy. Not that the podcast was getting stale, but – it was out of the blue. No one is expecting this, and it just...
Well, it's really, I think, humbling for both of us to see. We've been used to having a lot of downloads and a growing audience, but to have something go viral like this and to really expand the message that the show has overnight, literally, mm-hmm. has been humbling and exciting at the same time.
And it just puts a point on the fact that addiction is a family disease and everybody in the family needs to get help. And hopefully by listening to this podcast, we can point you in the right direction, give you some hope and give you some inspiration. Stick around. More Project Recovery. We'll be right back.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Project Recovery. I'm Casey Scott. That's my good friend, Dr. Matt. He's a clinical psychologist, and you know a lot about statistics.
I probably more than I want to, yeah.
You know, because when I was in college, statistics was the class that everybody hated. It was usually the class people would have to take two or three times.
Yeah.
But speaking of...
And I didn't like statistics either as an undergraduate. Let's just get that out of the way. But as a graduate student, when you can use statistics to study things that you're interested in, it becomes very interesting. And one of the things you find out is you have to be careful where you get your statistics, because people can fudge those numbers around a little bit to say what they want. But yeah, statistics are actually pretty cool.
So it was probably 3 weeks ago, we were doing a podcast, and a news report came out, and I double-checked it, triple-checked it. I went to all the news stations in the market, and it was a press release, and it was saying that the state of Utah saw no increase in substance abuse and suicide in the year 2020.
Yeah. Which, when I heard that, and I saw, you know, I saw the press release as well, and that didn't make any sense to me. And
because prior to that, we were telling everybody that it's been a perfect storm for substance abuse, for isolation, for suicidal ideology. Right. I mean, it really has been a perfect storm for that, because now people are at home more. They're drinking more. I mean, I've told you right now, my brother's a VP for Budweiser, and he says they've been seeing record numbers since the beginning of COVID.
Sure.
You know, basically saying that they've been seeing July numbers for the whole year.
For the whole year.
And July numbers are the big numbers, because that's the 4th of July, it's summer, it's hot, and everyone's on vacations, and that's when, you know, drinking's up.
Well, I think that, and I would guess from what I know, every company that makes alcohol is saying the same thing. I know the state of Utah, their
liquor stores,
liquor store sales are way higher consistently this year than they've ever been.
Yeah. And, you know, people are now doing a forced isolation because they're quarantined or they're not going into work. So they're not getting out, making that connection that we've said is so important in sobriety.
And I'll even say, even if it's, you know, like in my case, the majority of the work I'm doing, of course, has gone from face to face to my home office. And it's, you know, on virtual visits and things. And I don't really mind it. The funny thing about me is, while I really like people, I'm okay hanging out by myself. And like today, you know, in between patients, I can go down and let the dogs out and, you know, say hi to the kids when they come home from school. And, you know, I'm getting all that sort of interaction. But even somebody like me, who doesn't really mind not running around and talking to everybody all the time, you get kind of, I don't know, you get kind of lethargic. A little bit lackadaisical. I find it's hard to have enough energy to maybe always go work out and do those things. So it is taking a toll on people all across the spectrum all year. It's been almost a year.
So you say you got some new numbers saying that.
So I'm not going to refute the state of Utah numbers that came out. I don't really want to get into that. I do think that it's how you look at the statistics. I will say that there's some national numbers that we can't really ignore. And I had so when you're in graduate school, you do a lot of research projects, and they judge you based on your research projects, so whether they let you graduate or not. And mine were mostly statistical projects, to be honest, which sounds kind of boring, and it is. If you need to get to sleep, I'll let you read some of my research.
Your dissertations?
My dissertation will put you right to bed. I remember not being comfortable in the beginning with understanding how to read the statistics that I was trying to use. And I had this great professor who said, Matt, sometimes you just have to step back and ask yourself, do these statistics make any common sense? Like you know, we want to rely on the numbers, but sometimes the numbers can get, you can get a little bogged down in what the numbers really mean and don't mean. And so sometimes you have to step back and just say, you know, what I know in the world, am I on the right track here? Does this make common sense? And what you and I are saying is that this has been a very stressful year.
A couple of years.
We just got the statistic yesterday, I believe, or the day before, that the U.S. has surpassed 500,000 deaths due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We've also had people lose their jobs. A lot of people stressing and worrying about their health. I had a nice conversation with a young man today who wants to be out with his teenage friends doing things, but his mom is immunocompromised. And so he was very emotional, talking about the fact that he feels like he's missing out on his adolescence, mm-hmm. yet he loves his mom and doesn't want to take the chance of exposing her to COVID. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine being that kid?
Yeah, that's
heavy stuff when you're 16.
That's a big decision for anybody.
Yeah. And so many people are in that exact position. So it's been a financial hit. It's been a health crisis for sure. It's been the stress of having kids at home. If you step back and look at what makes common sense here? You'd say, well, in our lifetimes, and let's throw the election in here this year. In our lifetimes, we've never had a year this stressful as Americans. I would dare say that that's not an understatement.
Right.
Right. So it doesn't make common sense to say we're not seeing an increase in depression or suicide. And in fact, that's what we're finding in, and I'm not going to get into heavy stats, but like the Kaiser Family Foundation, KFF.org, if you want to go there, I think it's important to look at national organizations' statistics, not just small studies. So obviously, National Institute of Health or National Institute of Mental Health, Kaiser Foundation, the CDC, these are all great places to go get your data. Don't rely on getting it off of social media. Please just go to their websites and read their data. It's they try to make it very clear. And one of the things that we're seeing is that substance use and suicidal ideation are up in all categories, but particularly pronounced for young adults, with 25% reporting they started or increased their substance use during the pandemic compared to 13% of all adults. So if you take all adults, it's only 13% have said they started using substances or increased, whereas the young adult population, 25%. That's
one-fourth.
A lot of people. Yeah. And that's just during the pandemic, so in the last year, and 26%, so a little bit higher, reporting serious thoughts of suicide during that same period of time, as opposed to only 11% of all adults. So all adults, what we're saying is that substance use is up, suicidal thoughts are up, young adults are particularly vulnerable because a quarter of them have increased their substance use and their suicidal thinking. And so we'd have to say this is, like we talked about a year ago, we can't be lackadaisical. This is a mental health crisis that's going on this year. We need to take it seriously. People need to realize that you don't know what's going on in someone else's head, in their heart, in their homes. So you need to be thoughtful and kind, drive respectfully, wear your mask, be a civil person to other people, because there are a lot of people out there on the edge right now that probably a year ago would have never thought they'd be under this kind of stress. I have friends and acquaintances who were making good money until this year. And because of their types of jobs, their incomes are down or gone. I can't imagine taking care of a family if you're all of a sudden unemployed. But how many people have had to face that this year?
And we don't know the long-term ramifications of this all. I mean, we're going to be feeling this impact for years and years to come. Because right now, you know, as a parent, and a crisis comes to me, I deal with what I can first. You know, make sure I've got my roof over my kid's head, and I got food, and I've got that. And so now when that's figured out, then you move on to the other things. But we haven't even been able to move on to the other things yet, because we're all just fighting to figure out where we're going to be and when is this going to stop and when's it going to get back to some sort of normalcy. And I don't know if it ever is. I mean, the world's going to be forever changed because of this year. I mean, it really is. But we still don't understand what the long-term ramifications of all this are going to mean. They're going to be studying this for years and years to come.
Right. There are social changes that will never be the same, financial ramifications. I believe, and health ramifications. I believe that when it comes to things like work and how people work and live, there will be some positive changes that come out of it. But there are a lot of growing pains right now. People are figuring out, I can figure out other ways to work than I thought I could before. But that doesn't really comfort you very much if you can't pay your mortgage this month. You know what I mean? And so I think it's important for us to, if you hear statistics that don't quite make sense to you, double check, do your own research. The greatest thing about living right now for a nerdy guy like me is I can look anything up. Like, and you get maybe too much information in certain ways, but if you try to stay with trusted and true, you know, organizations and where you're getting your information, are you going straight to the source? What did grandparents used to say? Got it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
Like
my dad said another end, but yeah.
Okay. And, I guess it depends on the kind of information, but, you know, you want to go and do your own research sometimes. It's fun to feel informed and not just informed upon by social media and what other people are saying. So I know we've had some statistics that felt good to hear in the state of Utah, and maybe things are better than we thought they would be. But we're really struggling. I can tell you, mental health-wise, it's really hard to get an appointment with a therapist of any kind, with a doctor that works in mental health, because we're overloaded with people feeling stressed, feeling worried, and needing help. And so I feel like there's going to be some real positive things that come out of how we operate in healthcare. Healthcare is going to become much more convenient and available to people because we're going to continue to utilize virtual appointments. And that makes a big difference for our rural populations and people that need specialties that, you know, can't travel easily. So there's going to be some real positive things. But in the meantime, there's been a lot of growing pains. And I am imploring people, if you think you might benefit from getting some support, reach out and try it. What's the worst that could happen? You waste an hour of your time and feel like it wasn't helpful, but at least you reach out and try it. And I don't think you'd feel that way anyway. If you have a friend or a family member that you feel like is struggling, especially if you're, notice the telltale signs. You know, are they less engaged than they used to be, or given the parameters of their COVID life, are they less engaged than you think they ought to be? Are they drinking more? Are there more bottles and cans around the house than normal? Are they eating too much? We just had a great episode last week talking about, you know, the powerful addiction that food can be. If those people that you love are struggling, offer some help and support. Don't just say, what can I do? But just say, I think you're struggling. Let me help. You know, let them know you're really there for them. Help them make an appointment to go in and talk, even just for starters with your family doctor. That's a great place to start if you don't know where to go.
I love it. And I saw something on Facebook, you know, where I get my information. And it said this, and it's as simple as this. It doesn't cost anything to be kind.
It doesn't.
You know, and so I agree.
And you'll never regret it.
No. Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. If you need help, ask for it. If you can give help, give it. I mean, that's what we need to do right now during these crazy times and everything that's going on. A little more humanity, a little more empathy, a little more love. You never know what a kind word's going to do for somebody. You don't know how it could change the trajectory of their life or how it can really impact them. So once again, it doesn't cost anything to be kind. And so just be kind.
I can think of a very specific time when I was the recipient of that. And it made a huge difference in my life. And it wasn't too long ago. And you never know when your words make a big difference for somebody.
Yeah. And so thank you very much for letting us into your homes and into your cars and into your lives and for being a part of ours. And if we can ever help you out, you can always find us on our Facebook, our personal Facebooks, or email us. And if we don't get right back to you, we're trying, but we will get back to you.
Or we can stop at Casey's for barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Mike Traeger's at the girlfriend's house, so we'll have to go there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
She's the grill master.
I can see that.
Yeah. You're listening to Project Recovery, brought to you by our friends at knowyourscript.org. We want to say thank you once again for listening to us. Project Recovery is a KSL podcast.
Of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Smartin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.